I am Paul Harris, Ian Geist, Dan Strauss here in the studio with me, and we're now joined by our news director who has shed that costume for just a moment to put on his alter ego, showbiz boy, America's favorite movie reviewing superhero, and that's Colin Jeffrey. Hi, Colin, how are you?
Doing well. How are you, Paul?
Good. Everything okay in showbiz boy land?
Yeah, not bad.
All right, you got to see a couple of movies this week. I only saw one that's opening today, so why don't we alternate? You can start with one of your two.
Well, let's start with Everest, the big visual spectacle that only opens this week on large format screens, IMAX, IMAX 3D.
Okay.
That's all. It opens next week on the rest of the screens.
2D.
So, yes.
Yeah.
You should see it, though.
Okay.
In 3D. First of all, the 3D glasses are very cool in IMAX. They're like ski goggles, which is just kind of neat.
All right.
They're shaped like ski goggles.
But you know how I feel about 3D. I've only liked one movie and thought one movie I've ever seen in 3D was worth it, and that was Gravity, because of the scale of space. I'm
yes.
guessing that that may apply similarly to Everest.
Yeah, there are just shots of this that are great and really impressive when they're at the different parts of the mountain. There are a few scenes that really drive home how alone they are on this mountain.
Okay, now is this a history of the first people to go to the top of Mount Everest? Sounds like a science center OmniMax kind of presentation.
No.
That's not what it is?
No, this is a dramatization of John Krakauer's Into Thin Air, which recounts the deadliest day on Mount Everest. And so we are talking about the expedition that went simultaneously. If you ever did see the IMAX presentation of Everest, that IMAX crew was being led by another group. This was early in the days of the commercialization of Everest. And what I mean by that is for decades, Everest was climbed only by explorers, people who went there, had Sherpas, and climbed it themselves. When they realized there was a market for this, that sort of everyday adventurers or people who thought they were kind of early extreme athletes.
The kind of people who have an REI credit card.
Yes, but a credit card with a spending limit of like $65,000.
Oh, really?
Because that's closer to what it costs to get there and the permits and all the supplies. This tells the story of that world and how you've got these people who are paying obscene amounts of money not to climb halfway up Everest or get most of the way up Everest, but to climb to the top of Everest.
Okay.
And it's these guides who understand how dangerous and deadly this mountain is battling with this, I spent $65,000 to get me to the top mentality.
I don't want to hear, we can't go, the weather's too bad.
Exactly.
I paid this much money, I want to go to the top.
And that's what happens here. That this is a story of this group led by Rob Hall, who is played by Jason Clark pretty well. I don't think you can hang anything, any of this movie's shortcomings really, on any of the actors. It's got a huge cast. Jason Clark, the next biggest name, or the biggest name you'd probably recognize, is Jake Gyllenhaal. And then a lot of players you'll recognize when you see them. And then some you won't, because they actually hired, I guess they hired in some cases, people actually from Tibet to help play Sherpas.
Mm-hmm.
But this movie tells the story of them going. John Krakauer, who wrote for Outdoor Magazine at the time, his magazine sent him to climb Everest.
He used to have a show here, the Outdoor John Show. Remember that?
There yes. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That was great.
Yeah. I don't know whatever happened to him.
But so this tells that story of them trying to make it up and then horrible weather hitting. And I don't want to give too much away about the plot. It's if you've never heard of this, this will be all new to you.
Mm-hmm.
If you aren't familiar with Into Thin Air,
I don't know anything about
the
story. I don't know at all.
You are really the target market for this, because it's sort of like if you know the story of Titanic, you generally know how that movie's going to end up. If
mm-hmm.
you know Into Thin Air, you generally know how this is going to end up.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, there are still scenes that are worth it. My biggest issues with this, it sounds awful. I mean, parts of it are unintelligible because they're speaking with oxygen masks on, so they sound kind of, I mean,
what did you say?
Exactly. They're speaking with oxygen masks on, and then you can't tell who they are. Their faces are covered. It's muddled at times.
So they sound like Bane in that Batman movie?
Sort of.
That's no. My biggest problem with him as the hero, Tom
See,
Hardy.
See, I really
Bane.
Liked that voice.
How could yes. you tell?
because yeah. it was really creepy. I liked it.
Hey, Batman, Commissioner Gordon, looking for you.
I'm sorry. What did you say? What did you say? I'm afraid of you and you're a horrible villain. But could you repeat that, please?
Commissioner Gordon's looking for you.
Something about Commissioner
Gordon. Gordon's looking for you.
Oh, he's looking for me. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. Colin is my Batman Sherpa.
Yeah.
And Jason Clarke, who's the star of this movie, we saw him earlier this year in the new Terminator movie,
yes.
Terminator Genesis, which we both hated yes. with a passion.
But turned out not to be a flop because it had the largest weekend ever in China. I'm not kidding.
What is wrong with the Chinese? But Jason Clarke was also in Zero Dark Thirty.
Yeah.
And he's been in a few other things. He's a good actor.
He's a good actor.
Jake Gyllenhaal, very reliable, always good.
He is my favorite actor. I think he's the best actor working without an Oscar, okay. and that has to change.
All right.
This is not going to be the movie to do it.
Okay. Think he can win for that boxing movie? Didn't that just come out like last week?
Southpaw.
2 weeks ago?
No, I don't think he's going to win for that. He might get a nomination.
Okay.
But no, I don't think he wins. This movie's largest pitfall. You've got these great shots of the mountains or at the different base camps that are, they're really breathtaking shots, especially in 3D. It works really nicely. Then they get to the top of the mountain, and I'm not spoiling anything.
Hey.
I'm not spoiling anything because it's in the previews.
Okay.
And the shot at the top of a mountain looks like a middle school play set.
Wow.
It's this white... because it's got snow,
yeah.
and then there's this little 2 foot tall peak. And behind, Everest is the tallest thing, so they shoot flat, looking directly at the actors.
Yeah.
There's nothing else to see except the background,
yeah,
the sky.
I would guess Everest is really impressive when you're not on Everest.
Yeah, or you're looking down, shoot down on the actors from above, because...
Yeah.
Let's be honest, you're not flying a drone. You're not actually on the top of Everest.
And because it's the tallest thing around, there's no background except sky.
They shot straight back. And so you're like, wow, 3D, blue sky. Everyone who goes there, I mean, you're at the edge of the world. You're touching heaven.
They've literally made a molehill out of a mountain.
Yes. Oh, it was so disappointing. And that's my biggest issue with it. 6.5 out of 10.
Okay.
6.5 out of 10.
All right. The movie's called Everest.
But see it this weekend in 3D. Don't wait till next weekend and see it in 2D. That would be just disappointing.
All right. The movie I saw was called Pawn Sacrifice, which takes place in 1972. Well, the major part of the story takes place in 1972. It is about Bobby Fischer, who was, for a while, known as America's greatest chess player. And in 1972, we were still deep into the Cold War with the Soviet Union. And Bobby Fischer was the first great young American chess player at a time when the Soviets dominated the game all over the world. Everywhere they went, they were the big draw. It's going to be interesting to me to see how this movie does here in St. Louis, which has become the world capital of chess.
Mm-hmm.
Because Rex Sinkfeld has set up the Sinkfeld Cup, and players from all over the world came here just a few weeks ago. And were involved in the international championships, et cetera. In this case, Tobey Maguire plays Bobby Fischer. Now, I used to like Tobey Maguire until I interviewed a woman last year by the name of Molly Bloom, who ran some of the private high-stakes Hollywood star poker games in Los Angeles, including Tobey Maguire. And in that movie, she reveals that he is really a jerk. I mean, just arrogant, rich, greedy jerk. If you believe what she says in the book, I've read other articles about him that kind of back that up. But that makes him perfect to play Bobby Fischer, because Bobby Fischer was not only arrogant, but was also paranoid. Paranoid and going crazy at the same time. He developed mental health issues right around the time that this was going on, and they did not get better for him. His life really went down, down, down over the course of the next 3 decades. And he died a penniless, bitter, paranoid, insane man. In 1972, flashes of that were present, and Tobey Maguire plays that paranoia very, very well as Bobby Fischer. In 1972, Fischer worked his way through the elite of chess until he was able to play against the grandmaster champion of the Soviet Union, Boris Spassky, who in this movie is played by Liev Schreiber, who has kind of a thankless role because he's set up as the bogeyman for Fisher here, which he was at the time. And, you know, if you weren't around in 1972, you may not remember the hype that went into this. Now, it's funny to me as a person who plays poker that poker does get ratings as a TV show. Chess doesn't get ratings as a TV show. When they had the thing here in St. Louis a few weeks ago, the Singfeld Cup, they had live streaming commentary of it, and they were showing it and all of that sort of stuff. It didn't make for very good TV because basically you're sitting around watching somebody think and then move, and then the other person thinks. And the commentators have to fill in the blanks. And I remember in 1972 when Fisher played Spassky, there was live coverage of these matches from Reykjavik, Iceland, where they took place. And you had really high-level cerebral chess minds trying to explain what was going on at the highest levels of chess for all of us to understand.
Yeah.
Now, we had a huge chess wave in those days in the United States because of Bobby Fischer, singularly responsible for the sale of more chess sets at that time than anywhere else. Kids started playing it. I was playing it when I was in school, got caught up in that whole thing. And this movie acknowledges that and shows some of that. Tobey Maguire is very, very good in this role. Liev Schreiber is fine as Boris Spassky. Peter Sarsgaard is also in this movie as a priest who serves as an advisor to Fisher and helps him get through some of his crazy episodes. I mean, Fisher was sure that everything he was doing was being bugged by the Russians. He had specific requirements about the hall that they played in. And, you know, that camera is too close. Move that camera back. I can hear the humming of that. And, of course, when you play chess, you got to put a lot of brain power into it and think about it, and you don't want to have any kind of distractions. But when you're paranoid or super paranoid, as Bobby Fischer was, those distractions may not even be real distractions. You think they're distractions. You turn them into bigger things. He even forfeited one game because I can't play in here. We have to, let's just go somewhere else where it's quiet. What is this audience doing here? Well, Bobby, you remember we told you we were going to be in this auditorium, there'd be an audience. I never agreed to that, when of course he had. So there are a lot of scenes like that. They show the paranoia. They show the Cold War atmosphere. They show the intensity of what was going on then. And they also show a little bit about Bobby Fischer as he was growing up. It's a very, very well-told story about an interesting character who later went on to just be insane. It is the second best chess movie I've ever seen. The best chess movie is a movie called Searching for Bobby Fischer, which is about a young chess prodigy who everybody looks at him and goes, oh, he's going to be a young Fischer. His name is Josh Waitzkin, and that's a very, very good movie. Good family movie, by the way. It's got Joe Mantegna as the father and Joan Allen as the mother and Ben Kingsley and Lawrence Fishburne, believe it or not, as the two guys who are teaching him chess, one the traditional one, another one, you know,
the guy who plays in like the park,
plays in the park against anybody for 5 minutes for $5. And those sort of things do still exist. Searching for Bobby Fischer is a great movie. This is a very good movie. I give it 7.5 out of 10. It's called Pawn Sacrifice. It's going to be a Plaza Front Neck, Tivoli kind of movie, just in case you go looking for it. But if you have chess players in your family, or you were around at that time and remember how chess fever took over the country in 1972, you might want to see it. Pawn Sacrifice.
Okay.
Now, what's your other movie for this week?
Another one is the Johnny Depp vehicle, Black Mass, that tells the story they tell us of Whitey Bulger.
Whitey Bulger was the serial killer and mob boss in Boston who was just caught, what, 2 or 3 years ago,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, a handful of years ago after decades on the run.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, so Johnny Depp plays Whitey Bulger. This is a huge cast. Benedict Cumberbatch, Joel Edgerton, Dakota Johnson, Kevin Bacon, Peter Sarsgaard, Jesse Plemons from Friday Night Lights, as well as Breaking Bad. Those are Adam Scott, Corey Stahl. This is just a big cast.
Mm-hmm.
Hats off to the cast. There's not a weak link.
Now, I have to ask you, because I've liked some of the stuff that Johnny Depp has done, and in particular, I like a mob movie he made with Al Pacino 20 years ago called Donnie Brasco.
Yes, and he was also in a movie, Blow, that was about a cocaine dealer, yeah, that was also Very good, I thought. Those were in the days when Johnny Depp acted and did more than Pirates of the Caribbean and Tim Burton movies. Mm-hmm. And the problem is Johnny Depp has become a Tim Burton movie person and Jack Sparrow. And anytime he's tried to stray out of that, it has been to disastrous effect. And most recently, Mordecai, which I finally watched on video.
Mm-hmm.
And should not have. Do not watch Mordecai.
Okay. I wasn't. I remember when we talked about it when it first came out. It sounded horrible.
Yes.
But Black Mass, how is he as Whitey Bulger?
Excellent. Excellent. A very convincing, creepy, odd, just sort of unnerving. And that's who Whitey Bulger was and mm-hmm. had to be. You had to have someone who had this ability to convince people to murder for him. And that's perhaps what he's known for, or at least they highlight, is the trail of bodies that he leaves in trying to build a crime business. Mad Max is one of my favorite movies of this year.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I like it so much is that it shows you what's happening. You don't ever have to guess. They're not telling you something's happening. We're going to show you this happening. You can do that in movies. You're supposed to do that. This too often tells you. It's constantly telling you, Whitey Bulger is a crime boss. Whitey Bulger's building a huge crime syndicate. Whitey Bulger's a drug lord. You don't see any of that. You see him murder a lot of people and order the deaths of a lot of people. But you don't see him become anything of a crime boss.
So when the movie starts, is he already at that level?
He has just been released from prison, which included time at Alcatraz, and he's returning to the community, and his brother has just won a Senate seat, is a state senator. His brother went on, they tell you later, his brother went on to be the president of MIT, I believe. I mean, this was his family. His brother was excellent. One of his best friends from growing up is played by Joel Edgerton, and he has become John Connolly, an FBI agent who has been responsible for cleaning up another section of Boston. And he returns to Southie to clean it up and get the Italian mafia out of there. So he creates an alliance with Whitey Bulger, where Whitey Bulger will give him evidence to kick out the Italians.
So he's basically an FBI informant.
That's what they, yes.
Mob boss slash FBI informant.
Exactly.
Does that mean that he's doing stuff that the FBI turns
they say
the blinders
is,
on
but
about?
Again, he's killing people. Yeah, they're saying, oh, as long as there's no murder. And what is he doing? Immediately goes out and starts murdering people.
Mm.
We really don't see him do anything that's related to being a mob boss other than killing people.
Okay.
I have no idea how he's making money. I mean, they tell us, but you don't ever see it. And it's just disappointing.
Mm.
That is the fatal flaw of this movie. It would be so good if they actually told us the story. You have got to be familiar. Everest, you should go in knowing nothing about. This, you need to know who he is, and you need to know his story pretty well. Otherwise, you are going to be lost as to why we ever... This is a guy who spent nearly a decade as the number two on the FBI's most wanted list behind Osama bin Laden.
Mm.
This is a big, bad dude. Mm-hmm. And so far as I can tell, he killed a lot of people. And I can't quite understand why he would be number two on that list. He doesn't seem horrible. He spent a long time on that list.
Well, he killed a lot of people, though.
He did, but I'm like, number two, I mean, I feel like he should be doing something more. You're just showing him killing people. That doesn't seem big enough.
Well, I'll give you an idea of some of the stuff he did. I know he did not rewind all of his movies when he returned to the blockbuster.
I would have liked to have seen that.
If you would have told me that.
He has at least six library books that to this day have never been returned. Bad stuff, Ian.
There are also a couple of scenes that make it seem as if we're supposed to feel bad for Whitey Bulger. I'm not going to... They try to paint him a little sympathetic. This desperately wanted to be the next Departed or the next Town that take place in Southie. That's why you know it, because Ben Affleck, Matt Damon, Scorsese visit it. They tell you it takes place in Southie. Watch The Departed if you want to see a better story of Whitey Bulger fictionalized. This is fine. It's very well acted. But and I like the director, Scott Cooper, who did Crazy Heart, that I really like a lot. This was just a little bit of a letdown. 6.5 out of 10.
All right. So 6.5 for Black Mass, 6.5 for Everest, and I gave Pawn Sacrifice a 7.5 there. Now, a couple of other showbiz stories here. 2 weeks until my movie comes out, everybody.
And I cannot go to the screening.
It's your movie. Boy, it's just progressing week by week. Before it had a title and everything. Now it's just my movie.
Mississippi Grind. And my co-star, Sienna Miller. By co-star, I mean we're both in the movie. She's not in the scene that I'm in. Well, maybe she is for about 3 seconds. In the background. She was there on the day we shot it down in New Orleans. But Sienna Miller made some news this week because she was offered a role on Broadway, and she was going to take it until she found out that her potential male co-star would be making a lot more money. And she said, it was a play with just two of us on stage, and I was offered less than half of what he was going to be paid. If it was two men, that would not happen. And I'm sick of this. And so she walked away from probably would have been a pretty decent paycheck. She's done other Broadway before. She played Sally Bowles in Cabaret on Broadway. And she's done high-profile movies. She was in American Sniper, Clint Eastwood's movie, early last year, and got great reviews for that. So then I started looking up other actresses who have gotten the short end of the paycheck. I think one of the most famous is Charlize Theron.
Yes.
She was in a movie called The Huntsman with Chris Hemsworth. When she found out that she was making $10 million less than him, she demanded, and they actually did give her a raise. I don't know if she got the same amount of money as Chris Hemsworth, but she got a lot more money. Amanda Seyfried, is that how you pronounce her name?
Yeah.
It is Amanda?
Yes, who has the largest eyes. She's the one with the giant eyes. That's how you would know.
She was in some movie. She found out she got paid 10% of what her male co-star got. And they pretty much had the same size roles. Of course, one of the most famous ones is American Hustle. It took the Sony hack to reveal that Amy Adams and Jennifer Lawrence, who between them have, six Academy Award nominations and a couple of huge money-making movies, that they were getting paid less than the guys in that movie, Bradley Cooper and...
I can't remember the other one either.
The star of the movie. I can't even think of his name. That they were making a lot less, and because of the Sony hack, that changed a lot of things. And, you know, Lily Tomlin and Jane Fonda are doing this series for Netflix now. It's called Grace and Frankie.
They're the main characters.
They are Grace and Frankie, and I've watched the one episode of the show and then gave up on it. But they were going to be paid less than Martin Sheen and Sam Waterston, who play their husbands in the movie and have smaller roles.
Yes.
So there's a huge crisis going on here for women trying to get what they're supposed to be paid in Hollywood. And I guess Sienna Miller is just the latest in now a long line of this.
Christian Bale.
Christian Bale was the star of American Hustle.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
Of course.
Other stuff on your desk today?
We talk about the streaming services, how they're starting to pile up. This one I am actually excited for. BBC is preparing to offer a streaming service in America, a paid streaming service. I would likely pay for this because I like shows like Sherlock, Benedict Cumberbatch.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember the other actor's name. That's going to drive me nuts.
Martin Freeman.
Martin Freeman. Comes out 10 to 12 months after it is aired in the UK on PBS here.
Yeah.
Or BBC America.
BBC America.
I would pay to be able to watch some
of these
shows.
Yeah, but at a certain point, you know, we already have a cable bill.
Yes, I know.
And we already have a Netflix bill. And you know, I'm already paying for Amazon Prime, mostly because we need the deliveries of shoes at my house to come much faster. Thank you. not for me. But we also, you know, we get the streaming video there. So I'm already paying for those. I'm not going to pay for the Hulu Plus thing to get those shows without commercials.
This is for cord cutters. This is really for people who say, done with it. I get rid of my cable. I have internet. That's it.
But how many of those services can they afford to buy?
Well, HBO, Showtime.
Yeah. Or those over-the-top services.
But here's what it does.
HBO
and
Go.
This is a commonly heard complaint in cable. And this is, we talk about there are too many. You don't have to have all of them. I don't want all the cable channels I have.
Yeah.
I do not need to have HSN5, The Lost Jewels, or whatever.
Or
I don't
whatever
need
it is.
That channel.
Yeah, that's a great channel.
Exactly.
There are channels on my listings that I don't even know what that channel is. Does anybody know what the channel Pivot is?
Yes.
No.
No.
You do know what it is?
You have to keep one foot in place when watching it. it was, I believe it was the old... It has original programming.
Did you know there's an Esquire network?
Yes,
Esquire magazine has a TV channel.
I have seen that one before.
No, I've never watched it.
They have good movies on there, good old movies on there occasionally.
I think they have some Parks and Rec
episodes they do
on
every NBC.
Is that? Oh, that's right. It's NBC related.
Yeah.
Oh, they own that?
Mm-hmm. Well, Comcast owns it. Who owns NBC?
There's the ID channel, Investigation Discovery channel.
Yes. If you need to find out how to murder someone...
There's the Military Heroes channel. I mean, we can all agree that there are dozens of channels on the cable system that we never, ever, ever, ever watch.
Destination America?
Is that
one
of them?
Yes, that is one.
But so we don't watch a lot of those, but you don't get cable because you want more choices. You get cable because you want to have the choices that you want.
Exactly.
But if you don't have cable, if you're a cord cutter and you go the other route, A, you don't get to see new stuff as soon as it comes out.
Unless you have Hulu, in which case you wait a day. Or you have BBC. That's why they're starting all these originals, so you don't have to wait for Netflix.
How many of these $10 a month things are you going to have before you realize, wait a second, I'm paying the same amount for this that I was for cable?
Well, you'll figure it out.
What if you want to watch a game?
Yeah.
Then you pay for the MLB. You pay for the MLB ticket or the Sunday ticket.
MLB.TV.
Yeah.
No, that's the Sunday ticket. That's
Sunday. Sunday ticket's DirecTV.
Yeah, I'm sure there's a way you could buy it without.
I'm sure the NFL has some over-the-top thing that you can buy from them.
$1,000. There's a camera inside the ball. It's very dark, but it's in there.
Hey, they did have something cool last night. Did you watch the game last night?
The pylon
camera.
They
had the pylon cam.
No,
exactly.
And it got knocked over. Did you see that?
Yeah.
It got knocked over, and it was pointing up in the crowd or something.
Yeah, but, I mean, it was a good angle on
it was pretty wild.
A couple of touchdowns last night.
That was a great game.
That was a really good – any game that goes down to the last 45 seconds, that's
– yeah.
You know the Rams aren't in it. But
and they're trying to sell you on more of them. Showtime has their owners preparing to have their own standalone, and the way they're doing this is devious of Showtime. If you go to YouTube – go to the Showtime channel. They are now putting up pilots of shows or the first two episodes so they can get the hooks in you. And then guess what pops up at the end of the video? Oh, click here to subscribe to Showtime.
If you want to pay $10 more to see all the rest of these shows.
And so that's very devious, but I wouldn't be surprised to see other places start doing this.
David Letterman is going to be doing something for the National Geographic channel. What? David Letterman, didn't he retire from TV?
Yes.
No, he retired from late night TV. I did not know this, but National Geographic apparently has a show that's been on the air for a couple of years called Year of Living Dangerously, which is not an old movie with Sam Waterston and Dr. Hang S. Knorr. I may be confusing my old movies there. But this is a movie about, this is not a movie, it's a series about climate change, which last year won the Emmy for Outstanding Documentary or Nonfiction Series. And this year they're going to have such celebrities as Jack Black, Ty Burrell, James Cameron, Arnold Schwarzenegger, Olivia Munn, Asif Manvi, Ian Somerhalder, Cecily Strong, and David Letterman, who, according to the story this week, is going to travel to India to examine how that nation is trying to bring solar power to its entire population within the next decade.
Wow.
Whenever he had anybody on his show talking about climate, he was always very engaged, much more than he would be talking to, Cecily Strong, Ian Somerhalder, Asif Manvi, Olivia Munn, or any of the other celebrities who were on his guest. He was always very engaged in that. So it doesn't surprise me that he wants to do something related to this. But if you had asked me what will Letterman's next act be, I would have thought behind the scenes, not on camera.
Yeah.
So that's probably going to air early in 2016. And any other last
The Emmys
stuff?
This weekend. I just
oh,
wanted
yeah,
to
the
see
Emmys.
The Emmys this weekend. Any show you really... Rootin' gets recognition?
I hope that Silicon Valley, the HBO Sunday night show about high-tech geeks in a startup operation, it was in its second season last year. I love that a lot, and I hope that wins for best comedy. I don't know if it will. Probably not. I also hope Better Call Saul gets some attention, the spinoff from Breaking Bad, which I think is just terrific, and I can't wait for the next season to get going.
I'm with you on Silicon Valley. I love Parks and Rec, and this was its final season, I think, to get nominated. I would like to see – I can't remember. I think she got nominated. Amy Poehler needs some recognition for that.
She's nominated.
She can't be the funniest person in the room every year and not win. It has to stop.
One reason I may not watch the Emmys this year is because – that guy from Brooklyn Nine-Nine,
Andy Samberg,
is going to be the host, and I've never found anything he's done funny.
Well,
Just a matter of personal taste.
Fair enough. We'll talk about it next week.
All right. Colin will be back in about 20 minutes with the news and the rest. And he's here every Friday on the Showbiz segment of this show on the Big 550 KTRS.